Have you ever watched a movie and wondered why they cast that woman or that guy? Well, here's our chance to give it a try. We're repodcasting.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Repodcasting. I'm Lucia, and with me today is Elise. Welcome, Elise.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited, too. I'm really glad that we were able to make this work, and I'm really glad that you picked the movie that you did, if you want to tell everybody.
We are doing the 2005 version of Pride and Prejudice, starring Keira Knightley and Matthew McFadden.
Nice. So why did you pick this movie?
So, I have a lot of history with Pride and Prejudice. I loved it growing up. I was obsessed with the 1995 version, which is not a theatrical release, but with Jennifer L. and Colin Firth, who can do no wrong.
Well, and that one's also like 5 hours.
Yeah,
or
it's a full miniseries. Yeah. So it's definitely a different category. And then also in high school, I recorded my own like little film of my own rewritten version of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, wow.
As well as I starred in our high school production of Pride and Prejudice in 2005 as Elizabeth Bennet. So I have strong feelings about Pride and Prejudice.
That's amazing. Oh my God, I love it. Okay. I had no idea.
All the history.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I had never seen it. To be honest, up until very recently, I kind of avoided British period stuff.
Understandable.
And yeah, it sounded stuffy and not really in my wheelhouse. And actually, my friend Sandra, who was on our Emma episode, she has been introducing me to Austin, and I'm really enjoying it all.
I'm so glad. I mean, yeah. Austin is, she's so witty and so funny, and it translates so well to our current climate, even just with class issues and different types of gender issues and different things. So I think it's a great time to be introduced to Austin.
I am surprised at how relevant it is, considering this was first written in 1797.
Yes, very different time.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, and so what was kind of interesting too is that the movie, this movie, this version of it, is also set in 1797, even though most versions go for like 1813 when the book was actually finalized and released.
Yeah, I read that the director, I can't recall his name right now, but
Joe Wright.
Yeah, that he made that decision. And I do think that's really interesting. I will say this is not my favorite version of this story. Okay. I don't agree with all of the director choices, which I'm sure will come out and we'll get into it. But I did think that was really clever, and I appreciated that kind of detail and thinking about it from that perspective. So. Mm-hmm.
What's kind of weird is, at least the way I read it, is his reasoning for doing that is because he just didn't like Empire waisted dresses.
I also think I saw that. Yeah. I was like, okay, so.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this film had a budget of $28 million, which is pretty high.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty healthy budget. Absolutely. For a period piece.
And it does have a pretty stacked cast, so I'm guessing that's where a lot of the money went. But in the box office, it made $121.6 million worldwide. So yeah, it's a huge hit. And I am really looking forward to kind of getting into like the minutiae of why you don't like this version. Because I have recently-ish seen the miniseries too.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I want to know your thoughts as well. So.
Yeah, okay. So do you have a synopsis?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
All right.
For the folks who have not seen it.
So, when a wealthy unmarried man moves into a neighboring estate in the English countryside, all of the Bennet household is a twitter. With 5 girls in the household, Mrs. Bennet is eager for them all to marry, and to hopefully marry well. While the eldest, Jane, quickly catches the new neighbor's eye, the second eldest Bennet, Elizabeth, played by Keira Knightley, has vowed to never marry unless it is for love. When she meets the handsome but aloof Mr. Darcy, played by Matthew McFadden, she believes he is the last man on earth she could ever marry. But as their lives become more intertwined, she finds herself captivated by the very person she swore to loathe. Based on the beloved masterpiece by Jane Austen, it is the classic tale of love and misunderstanding that sparkles with romance, wit, and emotional force.
Very nice. Yeah, totally. One thing that I do love about it is, at least for myself, I have certainly found myself in the position of, like, initially butting heads or not getting along with someone, and eventually that leading to the exact opposite.
Totally. I think it's so relatable to have those first impressions of someone and be like, they're a snob, or they're, like, just a bully, or whatever impression you may have. And that was the first draft title, of course, of Pride and Prejudice was First Impressions.
Right.
But it's very relatable, and it's also just a classic love story, I think, that's been repeated over and over, this kind of maybe enemies to lovers trope or something along those lines. But I definitely relate to that feeling of judging someone kind of on first appearance, but then once you get to know them, softening and understanding maybe more of the complexity of a person.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, why don't we jump right into the recasting?
Okay, sure.
Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, the main reason that we're doing this movie is because we want to recast Keira Knightley.
Yeah. I did not like the casting of Keira Knightley. I think I had a really personal relationship with the character, of course, with Elizabeth Bennet. And I remember when this film came out and I was like, this does not work for me. Okay. And then rewatching it again recently, I kind of was affirmed in my ideas. You know, I've really come around to Keira Knightley in other films. And I think she is a great actor in other areas. But I think the casting was odd to me because, to me, Elizabeth Bennet is this kind of witty person, very intelligent, and Keira Knightley's version of Elizabeth is very goofy and overly earnest, and I just didn't relate to the character. She kind of has this, like, vibration about her, this energy that doesn't resonate for me in terms of that character.
Okay. That's really interesting. I don't know the character as well as you do, of course. So, yeah, I don't know. Definitely, like, comparing to, was it Jennifer L?
Jennifer L.
Yeah, I mean, she was fantastic in the miniseries. And I do see what you're saying in that she was, like, maybe Keira Knightley was a little too earnest or goofy.
Yeah, I mean, it also, I will say, too, the entire pacing of this film is fast.
Yeah.
Like, it really is. Whiplash fast. So it may be related to that as well. Partly that there's this kind of, there's a bit of an edginess to this version compared to other versions of it. Maybe that's where it comes out as well, and some of that energy. But yeah. And also just, I know the character is young. The character is 20 years old, but I felt she played it even younger in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was 20 when the film was released. Okay, well, who did you decide to recast her with?
I did a lot of back and forth on this.
Okay.
And I did cast it as if it was 2005.
Okay.
I have definitely some other ones that are more dream castings that I would talk about. But I chose as my kind of first choice, and I did cast this lead with the male lead, with Darcy.
Okay.
Like, so I did pair them a little bit. But
yeah.
I chose Emily Blunt
as
my Elizabeth Bennet. So she's only a couple of years older than Keira Knightley. So she would have been, you know, 22, still within, I think, an appropriate age range to play the character.
Yeah.
But I just think there's something about Emily Blunt has this kind of wit about her, I think, that could have translated really well. And also maybe just a bit more toned down. And would have played, like, the zingers that Elizabeth Bennet has. Like, I think she would have done those really well.
Okay. Well, I love that casting because I also chose Emily Blunt. That is too funny. I love it. Yeah, she absolutely, like, she stands out to me in that way of, like, I mean, first of all, she's just a talented actor. She can do so much. And she was the right age. And she would be more, I don't know if fun is the right word. Like, I would have more fun watching her do it.
Yeah, I think she would have maybe just brought more depth to the character, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny because, I mean, Keira Knightley was thought to be a bad choice by the director at first as well. Apparently, he thought she was too attractive to be Lizzie. And then he met her and changed his mind.
I question some of his judgment, for sure. He seems to, kind of change his tune a bit on a whim.
Yeah.
He doesn't like certain types of waistlines, and then also this kind of just... I can understand why at the time, like, trying to find someone to cast was really difficult. It's a hard character to cast, for sure. It's a really complex. I can see why they cast Keira Knightley. I do just think there were stronger choices probably out there.
Yeah. So. And, I mean, clearly he ended up really enjoying working with her because they worked together again in Atonement.
Right.
And I think, I want to say Never Let Me Go. No, Anna Karenina was the other
one.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I did love Atonement.
I think.
And I liked her a lot better in that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Yeah. So do you have another Lizzie or?
I do. Okay. I had a second choice.
Great.
I actually cast Carey Mulligan.
Oh,
who was in the film, actually. Mm-hmm. Played the younger sister, but she's the same age as Keira Knightley.
Oh, okay.
So could have easily played the lead. And I think she's a strong actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she would have also kind of brought some of that... just emotional intelligence kind of elevated that a little bit with her portrayal of Elizabeth. Yeah.
That's really good because, well, this was her first film role.
I know. That was also, I was like, that's why she was the second choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But having seen her in many things since, absolutely she could do that role justice. And quite frankly, she's kind of miscast in this movie.
She is. It's there. Honestly, like we didn't. I know we're only casting the two because it could have just gone on forever. Because there's some great casting choices in this film, but there's some other questionable ones. So that's being one of them. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second.
Yeah.
What do you think about the casting of Donald Sutherland as the
father? Hate it.
Okay.
What did you think about it?
I loved it.
Really?
Now I haven't read the book.
Okay.
So I really liked that he was so warm and like, and even like while watching it, I was watching it with friends who said that's not what the character is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
But just for my own like viewing pleasure, I enjoyed that more.
I mean, I love Donald Sutherland, so it's hard to speak negatively about that. I think knowing the character so intimately, I just don't think it was quite the right role. I kind of pictured this is just. We're not recasting this, but off the top of my head, I had kind of thought of like Hugh Laurie.
Someone
in that role would have been really good too.
Okay.
But I mean, Donald Sutherland is, I mean, he's lovely.
Well, what I love too is Joe Wright called him a god, I believe it was, and that's why he cast him.
Okay, well, there you go.
Okay, so I also had a second choice for Lizzie. This one might be controversial because I do try to keep British actors in very British roles and vice versa. Like I do find that often I'm distracted hearing someone's accent like creep in, but I decided to go with Natalie Portman.
Oh, I had her as a possible on my list, to be honest.
Yeah, and I have heard her. So in that very same year, she was in V for Vendetta and she's doing a British accent in that. And it felt really passable to me. And so that part, I was like, okay, I can get over the accent. And I also just think she's a really talented actor and could have certainly brought more depth to Lizzie.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think she would have been also, I had like some other thoughts of, you know, people who were not British. And I think there's some people who could have probably done it well as well. And Natalie Portman was one of them for sure.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, then why don't we move on to Mr. Darcy?
So hard to cast. Yeah. Also, I mean, I do love Matthew McFadyen in this role. I think he is a very good Darcy. It's one of the things about the film that I like. Yeah, so trying to cast that, and I was thinking about Emily Blunt just being those couple years older as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with Gerard Butler.
Oh, interesting.
I know. I was a bit of a wild card. But I really think he could play the character's kind of stoicism, but also the softness that comes out over time.
Yeah.
He's like, he can be a little bit rough around the edges. He's also, I mean, he's a very attractive man too, which doesn't hurt. And I always kind of pictured, in terms of the character of Darcy, I think that character is a little bit coded autistic.
I agree.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's, it needs to have a certain level of kind of aloofness to how it's portrayed. And yeah. I think that Gerard could maybe bring that.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, I love it. While I love Colin Firth and think he's a fantastic actor, I actually felt that that's what was missing from his portrayal of Mr. Darcy was, like, at some point while watching, I think I yelled, like, he's gone too far. He's irredeemable. I don't want them together now.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I don't know. There were little things that Matthew McFadyen did that, like, you could tell that he's not a jerk.
Yes.
Like, to me, watching the Colin Firth version, I was having the same reaction as Lizzie. I'm like, he's the worst. And so, yeah. So that's why, like, I really prefer Matthew McFadyen's portrayal. And I wanted to kind of keep that. So I ended up choosing Rupert Friend.
Oh.
Who plays Mr. Wickham in this movie.
Oh. Okay. Now, I don't know if I can see it, but tell me more.
Well, I do think that he's a talented actor. Like, I think he could pull off the delicate balance of being aloof and kind of like awkward and but not coming across as a total irredeemable jerk. And that's really what my baseline was there. He's also very nice looking.
Yes. I did love him as, yeah.
So. Yeah, he's great as Wickham, so that, like, there's also part of me that's like, don't remove him from that. But I don't know. I really thought that also, like, him and Emily Blunt, I feel like they have good chemistry. At first I was like, oh, I wonder if they would have good chemistry. And then I realized that they're in a movie together called The Young Victoria.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I watched like a bunch of that this weekend and I was like, oh, they're so cute. Oh. And so that sealed it for me.
Okay. You might have converted me. Yeah. Awesome. I think I just always pictured Darcy as someone more dark features.
Okay.
So that's where I like, well, I mean, he has dark features too, but
I think he does have blue eyes though.
Yeah. But I think Matthew McFadyen has blue eyes too, perhaps.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I have to look that up. Anyway, yeah.
Okay, awesome. Do you have a second Darcy then to match with?
Yeah, so again, this one is, again, in the same way that Carey Mulligan was probably not ready to be cast in that role, but we know hindsight. This is also a hindsight casting in a way. I put Ben Barnes.
Ben Barnes.
Who is most recently in Shadow and Bone on Netflix.
Okay.
So in that, he plays one of the kind of more villainous, the main villain, actually. But he's just very kind of stoic, tall, dark, and handsome. But I think he could really nail that role and the complexities of it, just seeing how he's played that. Yeah, so.
All right, I'll have to check out Shadow and Bone.
Yeah.
So much like Natalie Portman was maybe like a wild card choice for my Lizzie, I also have a bit of a wild card choice for my second Darcy. And that is Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Oh.
Yeah, so he obviously is a super talented actor. He was in Love Actually with Keira Knightley in 2003. And he was in Kinky Boots in 2005, in the same year as this movie. Now, of course, like, I guess you'd call it, like, colorblind casting, because if you're talking about 1797 England, that doesn't make sense. But who cares?
I think
he would play it well.
Yeah. And the story is rich enough that it doesn't need, you could totally play with that.
I think so, too. And I think that he does that kind of stuffy British guy really well, too, but has that softness there that could come out later.
I could actually see that. Nice. Yeah, I could see him as a Darcy for sure.
Awesome. Okay. Oh. Great. So those are our main castings. It sounded like you also had like some other things, that you said? Like some like current day type casting?
Oh, yeah, I did kind of. I mean, more like, well, okay, what I'll say about this film, one of the realizations I had when I was watching it, and I watched it with my partner, and he had recently read the book, but he hadn't seen this version. So it was interesting to see it through his eyes, too, having never seen it. He made this comment about that this is almost, this version is kind of a fan fiction version of Pride and Prejudice.
Interesting.
So I think it's like the casting then in that way. If I were to cast, you know, in my fan fiction life, my dream world, you know, and he will disagree, my partner who's from Chile will disagree with this choice. But I can't unsee
Pedro Pascal in that white shirt. Yeah. As just like Mr. Darcy now in my brain. Mm. So he was kind of one of the ones in my head.
That's good casting.
That I was just like, I just want to see him play that role someday.
For sure. Somehow. Oh my goodness, yes. But he might have already aged out of it by
he's
now, but that's okay.
I know, it's okay. It's fine. We'll just, this is fantasy land. But one of the other, if I was kind of casting a little bit more modern, mm-hmm. and not like necessarily right now, but sometime like in the last like decade, I mean, Saoirse Ronan would play a fantastic Elizabeth Bennet.
Yeah.
And then I put maybe with her someone like Kit Harington.
Okay.
Who I think could maybe play potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot of, my real wild card was Emma Stone.
Oh, nice.
She's a fantastic actor.
Yeah, that's funny, yeah.
Be funny to pair her with Pedro Pascal, having come off of China.
Yeah,
not quite. And then I also was like, what about Christian Bale as Mr. Darcy?
I thought about
him. Did you think about him as well?
I did, yeah.
He kind of could do it.
I think so. Yeah, he could definitely pull that off. Saoirse Ronan, I love that. I hope she gets the opportunity to do it.
I know. I she's definitely one of my favorite kind of like young British. Well, she's Irish.
Yes.
But yeah. From the Isles. she's just a fantastic actor, too.
Absolutely.
And I think she could really play like really complex characters like mm-hmm. Elizabeth Bennet. So,
yeah, absolutely. I love that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that happens.
Yeah.
So usually I find lots of different like alternatives of who auditioned and stuff like that. There was almost nothing for this movie. So I don't know. It sounds also like Joe Wright, like I'm sure there's a casting person on the film, but it sounds like he was very much in charge of who got to play what. But there was someone named Romola Garay.
Oh, Romola Garay.
Oh,
she was
sorry,
on
yes.
my list as well, actually.
Okay.
She's a really talented English actor, and I don't think she's gotten her due.
Oh.
Which,
Yeah, I don't know her at all, but she auditioned for Lizzie.
Okay.
Later, she did end up playing Keira Knightley's sister in Atonement.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that covers most of what I wanted to say. Oh, actually, I do like that you mentioned that this was initially called First Impressions. In one of the early scenes of the film, Lizzie's reading a book, and it's called First Impressions.
Oh, yeah. I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, I didn't either. I read that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was great. And then also, I do want to mention Rosamund Pike. I mean, she's so great.
I thought she was excellent
yes.
in that.
Yeah, oh, I
that
love
was
her.
A great casting choice for sure.
Mm-hmm. She was his first choice for Jane, and she actually turned down the role of Rita Skeeter in the Harry Potter universe to play this.
Oh, well, this maybe a good thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I loved her in this role, so.
Yeah. Now, her ex-boyfriend, you may or may not know, is, Simon Woods, who played Mr. Bingley.
Oh, yes. I thought he was adorable as Mr. Bingley, actually.
So adorable.
I didn't know they were together, though.
They weren't. They were already exes at the time.
Oh, they were exes when
yes.
they...
Yes!
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, so the director did, like, call her up, and he's like, look, I won't cast him if you're not comfortable. But he's like the best that we've seen, and she's like, no, that's great, like totally.
Well, they obviously still have some chemistry.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
absolutely, they're like kind of my favorite pair in the movie.
I agree. Yeah. I think they honestly outshone a lot of the other people.
Yeah,
just that. Yeah,
yeah, I agree. Yeah, they were both great. And I think that's pretty much it. Oh, except for the fact that poor Simon Woods, so he's a natural blonde.
Okay.
Dyed his hair red for this because the director insisted, and then it somehow just kept growing back in red, and he resents Joe Wright for that. I don't understand how that can happen, but anyway, that was written in IMDb trivia, so let's also take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, from my experience with I dye my hair red, usually red does not last very long.
Right.
So it's one of the first to fade out of your hair. So yeah. I have doubts about that story. But also, if there was a magical way to dye my hair red and have it keep growing red, I would do it.
Same, honestly. I love that he resented the director for it. I'm like, that's not a bad thing. You look great as a redhead.
I know. I honestly didn't even think of him as not a redhead when I was like watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Anyway, it works for you, Simon Woods, if you're listening. The scene where the Mr. Darcy is walking and it's like all foggy
the
and
scene.
Beautiful.
The scene.
Well, apparently poor Matthew McFadyen has very bad eyesight and the director had to like stand behind the camera person waving a red flag so he knew where to walk.
That's very endearing.
Yeah, I thought that was very cute.
Oh, funny. Yeah, that is like the scene that everyone thinks about. And when I've like told people, I was like, oh, I'm going to be talking about this film. It's always the one they're like, oh, that scene, it's so romantic. But to be honest, like as much as I love how romantic and beautiful, like the cinematography, all of it's like gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it over-romanticized the story in many ways.
Oh, okay.
I think that, and it's probably, it's hard to compress that whole story into 2 hours, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
they did a good job
course.
Of bringing it down into that, but it's, you know, it's such a slow burn of a romance.
Yeah.
And so the buildup in this film feels so fast and, like, grand and overly romantic, and the music is very, like, orchestral and grand, and I think what's missing partly from this version for me is some of, like, the really funny, quirky kind of moments that Jane Austen is really good at, too. And, like, Pride and Prejudice is quite a funny book. And just because of having to cut so much, and I know they cut even a lot from the script, I guess, because, you know, trying to fit it into that kind of theatrical release time frame.
Yeah.
But, I love and hate that scene, but that's also why I kind of, I'm like, oh, it's like fan fiction.
Yeah. It's probably good to look at it from that angle.
Yeah, it is that kind of feeling, right? And there was that whole alternate ending, of course.
I was about to bring that up. Yes. Okay, so the version you watched had the US ending?
I've seen both versions.
Okay.
I remember when it came out, and of course I went to go see it in theaters with all my friends, that I think that one had the US ending.
Oh, it did. Okay.
But when I just rewatched it on Netflix, it had the original ending. It didn't have that extra bit added on.
So I didn't realize it was streaming, and I actually went old school and grabbed the DVD from the library.
I love that.
And the DVD did have that US ending, so it has that extra scene, for anybody listening, where they've gotten together. But you don't really, like, the story ends when they get together. Like, it's not... You're not seeing their relationship together so much. But then they added this weird scene, totally unnecessary, of them, like, hanging out in front. Aren't there fireworks and everything? I feel like there were fireworks, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know if I remember fireworks, but I remember,
it's nighttime.
Like, I thought it was, like, a sunset sort of thing, maybe.
Okay.
But nighttime makes sense, more sense.
Yeah, I think it was nighttime. Anyway, and they're, like, flirting and kissing, and, like, it just feels so misplaced.
Yeah. I think it was supposed to be kind of like this, like, after they're married, this addendum to the story. And, like, that, I mean, again, coming back to fan fiction, that's so, like, if you were to write the continuing story of it, completely unnecessary. So, when I watched it this time, it didn't have that. And I was like, oh, good, right? I remember not liking that ending.
It's really silly and doesn't fit the rest of the story.
No, because it's...
The way they're talking to each other in that scene, it doesn't sound like Austen dialogue. Like, it just is, it's really egregious.
Well, and of course, the original Austen ends with, like, you know, the double wedding.
Right, yes.
With Jane and Mr. Bingley and Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy, and they're all happy, and everyone's married, and...
Yeah, and it ends with the wedding,
and
that's it.
And that is it, so...
Yeah. Okay, excellent. What did you feel about Brenda Blethyn's performance as Mrs. Bennet.
I didn't mind it, but comparing to 1995.
I know.
And it's so hard to not compare.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, only, like, 10 years between them, and that version was really beloved.
Yeah.
And the Mrs., and I can't remember who plays Mrs. Bennet in that one, but, like, great British actor. So funny. Like, I just feel like... You know, when I go back and watch that now, that BBC version, especially as an adult, I think when I was younger, I was more drawn to the drama of it. But now as I'm older and I'm watching it, I'm like, this is a story really of hilarity and, like, kind of circumstance and these funny moments and quirks of life then.
Yeah.
And I love those little moments and the how funny the mother is. Mrs. Bennett is a really funny character.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree that she's certainly funnier in the BBC version. And I don't know if it's just because she gets more airtime.
partly, probably.
Yeah. But, like, she's so over the top. In fact, in both of them, I think it's just the character is so over the top in trying to get her daughters married off. But it is kind of interesting because, like, at that time and their class level, she probably would have to do that, right?
And that's the thing. Like, I feel like I have so much sympathy for the characters and, you know, for Mrs. Bennett especially, you know, she's ridiculous. She's a ridiculous character. But she has five daughters.
Yes.
They won't inherit their estate, of course. You know, the only hope she has of maybe even being taken care of in her old age also is probably with one of her daughters. Maybe not even. And it's her kind of moral obligation in a way to make sure that her daughters are taken care of.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that kind of fear around that. And I don't know if it comes out so well in this version of Pride and Prejudice, but that class disparity, and even they're, you know, quite well off comparatively to many people. They don't, you know, have the grand estate or anything, but they have servants and they have people in their household. But the insecurity of being a woman during that time was a very real thing. And this is why it's so relatable even now, because now maybe it's not so much about this, so I won't inherit the estate, but now it's like, oh, well, I have to stay in this relationship because I can't afford an apartment on my own.
Yeah.
You know, and like the housing crisis. And I think it's often, again, women and, you know, other equity deserving groups of people who are hurt the most by the kind of economy that we live in. And so, although it's not the same then as it is now, it's so understandable. And I think that's why it's like, it's so fun to find the romance and the humor within that. And why that's like the dream of, you know, being able to, you know, Elizabeth's dream is to marry for love.
Yeah.
And ultimately she gets to, and she gets to marry someone very well off and handsome and who she has witty banter with. You know, I think it's not a reality for most women at that time, and so these novels act in that kind of like romance fantasy genre
for
in
sure.
That way.
Yeah. And that's why they endure.
And that's why they endure. Why we will hopefully have many more versions of Pride and Prejudice.
I don't know if you heard this, but Emma Thompson did like a rewrite, uncredited, on the script.
Yeah, in parts of
just
the,
a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was
Catherine
the
DeBerg.
Yeah. The scene where Charlotte tells Lizzie that she's going to marry Mr. Collins, which I think is a really good and powerful scene. Like, it's well done in this version. And then also the scene where Lizzie is trying to tell her aunt and uncle and Mr. Darcy about Lydia running away with Wickham. And she kind of like comes into the room, can't say it, leaves, and then comes back. Like, it's this really, like, funny moment. Yeah. And that was Emma Thompson.
I mean, she's brilliant. And, like, Sense and Sensibility.
Okay.
Which
I haven't seen that one yet.
Well, maybe that's one that has to be done as well. Although it would be very hard to cast, recast.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's, you know, another incredible Austin film, beautifully done. Okay. Probably one of my favorites, to be honest. And she's, you know, wrote it and starred in it.
Oh, awesome.
So,
She's great.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Wow.
All hail the queen.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, so the ratings for this movie. On IMDb, it has an 82% from 37 critics. And on Rotten Tomatoes, it has an 87% from 180 reviewers.
I am in the minority.
Well, I mean, these are probably, like, a lot of those reviewers are probably people who have not seen the BBC version or read the book, right? Like, they're just coming at it cold, is my guess.
And I think as a film, and it's just too hard for, I'm too close to it, to the story, but as a film, I can totally understand why so many people love it.
Yeah.
And I think it's different in so many ways than what you would expect a period piece to do, even mm-hmm. like with the cinematography and the sound design. I don't know if you did notice that it's like they really keep a lot of the chaos of the kind of household in the background as their actors are speaking. They really don't dim that
yes.
background noise. And yeah. I thought that those choices were really interesting. And mm-hmm. so from a filmic perspective, yeah, absolutely. I get it.
It's funny because, like, I always thought Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, they sound like dramas. I don't know why. Like, just from the
yeah,
title.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But they're really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, Sense and Sensibility is next.
Yeah, I think that's me.
Excellent. Well, then, why don't we get on to our last segment?
Hold me close, young Tony Danza.
Very DIY, as Elise now sees.
I love it. The glimpse behind the curtain.
It is time for Hold Me Close, Young Tony Danza, the segment where we cast Tony Danza into an English period piece. This was a tough one.
Yeah. Hard to maybe imagine him in any of it.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
For sure. Should we make him one of the, like, background characters that doesn't speak?
Where's the fun in that?
So where did you decide to cast him?
Yeah, I kind of my immediate thought was Mr. Collins.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I
oh,
just thought, like, the kind of, like, uppity-doo moral character Mr. Collins could totally be a Tony Danza moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Collins is so funny, too.
So funny. It's one of the best characters, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really, that character is such a comic relief, I think, to a lot of the story, too. He's very awkward and ridiculous. Just a ridiculous person.
Yes, very unself-aware. I don't know what the opposite of self-aware is. Okay, well, for me, I was struggling. Mm-hmm. And I ended up casting him as Mr. Gardner, who is Elizabeth's uncle.
Yeah.
I didn't want to put him in too big a role. Look, I love Tony Danza.
Fair.
I think he has range, but this does not fall within that range.
This is just a smidge outside of Tony Danza's range.
So I did want, like, you know, a smaller role. But also, Mr. Gardner is this nice man, her kind uncle who she hangs out with. Like,
I can see it.
And in 2005, I feel like he was probably maybe a little too young, but, like, within the right range, age range.
Within the range still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to cast him as a nice man.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I cast him as the most awkward, bumbling, chaotic character.
But I kind of love that. I would love to see it. It's amazing. You're pushing him outside of his range, and that's great.
You know, sometimes we just have to throw people into the deep end, throw Tony into the deep pool.
Yes.
So you can do it.
Amazing. Okay, well, I don't have a movie for next month yet, so that'll come as a surprise. I'll record something later. In the meantime, thank you so much. This was very fun.
Thank you so much for having me. I am overjoyed to get to rant about this film and Pride and Prejudice for this time. And it's just so fun to think of dream castings and other ways of looking at characters, too. It was new for me to dive into this, and I really enjoyed the process, actually.
Yay. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad to hear it. I'll have you back soon, then.
Yay.
Okay. As for repodcasting, you can find us on almost all the social media stuffs at Repodcasting, or if you have any film suggestions or complaints or praises about our choices, you can email us at repodcasting@gmail.com. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next month. Bye.
Bye.
Hello again. Lucy here to let you know that next month's movie that we're recasting is The Iron Claw from 2023. And I will be having on Karen and Elizabeth from the amazing and unfortunately now defunct podcast, That's a Thing. They'll be joining me to help me with the recasting process. So watch the movie if you can. I think it might not be streaming yet. So this might be one, you know, maybe you hold on to the episode until it is streaming. But if you have seen it, recast along with us and listen on May 1st when the new episode comes out. Thanks. Bye.